Good evening. Welcome to the Slayer Report. Today is Thursday, December 21st, 2017. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted that you could join me this evening. Well, welcome to our new subscribers. We have a lot of new subscribers. There is a commentary that just rolled off the homepage called Soleri Core Concepts, and I recommend it to you. It's a great way to get introduced to some of our thinking. And then, of course, we have the best of the Soleri Report this week and next. This week, the wrap-ups. Going through the 2017 wrap-ups is a great way to sort of get introduced and access our content. Also, we've sent out all the Gift of the Soleri Report. This is December's Give the Gift and month, and every subscriber is invited to give a complimentary subscription that includes the annual wrap-up coming up in 2017 as to a recipient of their designation. Those have been emailed out to the recipients, and you've been CC'd on the email notice. If you haven't gotten that, or if your recipient tells you they haven't received theirs, please let customer service know. We want to make sure all of those get to everybody by Christmas and the holidays. The hard copies of Control 101 mail today, so if you ordered one or you got one in the promotion, they should be headed your way, and you should have them sometime next week. It's a remarkable production. I strongly recommend getting the hard copy this time. You can pick it up at the store. We still have two or three more spaces available in the May 2018 trip. And so if you're interested in going to the Australian Outback with Richard Dolan, Jason Bodensmith, and myself in May 2018, you can just link and sign up from the homepage. Our theme this evening is support the Bundys or kiss your property rights goodbye. The Bundy family is the ranchers from Nevada who've been on trial for, it seems like many years now, but had a standoff at their ranch in 2014 over land rights and land use with the Bureau of Land Management. The judge today in their current trial declared a mistrial, and we're going to know, the judge is going to rule on whether that's going to be with prejudice. In January 8th, if they rule with prejudice, it's going to be extremely difficult for the Department of Justice to retry the case. The judge, when she declared the mistrial, said that the U.S. prosecutors willfully withheld critical and potentially exculpatory evidence from the defense. Why are we not surprised? Nothing the Department of Justice does ever surprises me. That included records about surveillance at the Bundy Ranch, records about the presence of government snipers, FBI logs about activity at the ranch, law enforcement assessments dating to 2012 that found the Bundys posed no threat, and internal affairs reports about misconduct by the Bureau of Land Management agents. This was all triggered by a very brave whistleblower from the Bureau of Land Management, Larry C. Wooten, whose reports ultimately found their way to the defense attorneys. And in fact, as of last week, you could get them on Dropbox. They paint a very frightening picture of what the Department of Justice and FBI and Bureau of Land Management were up to in this case. I tweeted out last week, I thought the prosecutors ought to be prosecuted over this one. But Larry Wooten certainly deserves one of our Heroes of the Year award and is going to be Hero of the Week tonight on the Soleri Report. If you dig in and look at the Bundy Ranch or the Hammond Ranch cases or all the ranchers who've been literally run off from the land in southern Nevada, there are serious questions about what's going on and how this relates to the Uranium One scandal with the Clintons and with a variety of energy companies trying to do solar farms, and that involves both, I believe, the Clintons and Harry Reid, former senator from Nevada. Apparently, Attorney General Sessions has ordered an investigation of the Bundy case. And in fact, according to MSNBC today, Sessions also asked for a review of the FBI investigation of the Uranium One deal to determine if a special prosecutor is warranted. And again, that makes me wonder about the connections to the Bundy case and the land in southern Nevada. My personal experience is Department of Justice is literally the center of the swamp. Their disrespect for the law is deeply ingrained, in part because the U.S. is so financially dependent on organized crime. I wrote Attorney General Sessions earlier this year after we interviewed Howard Root, the author of Cardiac Arrest, who spent 5 years as a very successful business CEO litigating with the Department of Justice. And I suggested that they ought to get Howard Root. Attorney General Sessions ought to hire Howard Root, because until you convert Department of Justice to an organization that's committed to justice, as opposed to, as many of us refer to them, Just Us, J-U-S-T, new word, U-S, Just Us, they are a small business destruction machine. If you want to have business succeed, if you read the latest promotions from the White House with respect to tax reform or their national security policy, they're talking a lot about promoting the strength of business, including small business. The reality is, if you want to promote small business, you need to stop the federal government from destroying small business. And that, at the very heart of that destruction machinery, is Department of Justice. Today, Sessions and the intelligence agency heads are pushing Congress for a reauthorization of their surveillance law before year end. Question is, will Congress do it before they leave tomorrow? I don't know, but I'm, for one, I'm suspicious of the extent to which the corporate contractors cycle that data to the disadvantage of small businesses throughout the country. Our holiday greetings. We sent out a special holiday greeting earlier this week. You can go to holidaygreetings.celeri.com to see our 2017 holiday greeting and all the ones we've done since 2010. Each year we choose people who are worthy of our support for major donations at Christmas time. And this year we chose the Whistleblower Protection Program. Jess Raddick is the attorney leading it, and she is the attorney that represented Bill Binney and the NSA whistleblowers, who are doing so much good in this world. And the other was to Lynn Albrecht, who's leading the fundraising and management of her son's defense on the Silk Road case. And those are two more examples of unbelievably malicious prosecution by the Department of Justice. But we're punching back, and this has been the year of punching back. In 2018, we're going to punch back more. So I think the people who are punching back mean a great deal to all of us. And so we've provided donations for them and recommended them to you. And I think you'll be very interested in who they are and what they do. It's very inspiring. Just goes to show you how many great people there are who are standing on the wall between freedom and tyranny. Money and markets. We are headed for a close this year of the dollar down 9.21%. That's after the tax reform bill is passed. The long treasury, the TLT ETF, is now down to 7%. It's been higher this year, but still quite a respectable performance given the bumping of the interest rates by the Fed. The intermediate ends the year up 1.84%, the aggregate bond 3.13%, and junk 5.55%, very respectable given the credit problems, particularly in the oil and gas patch. The S&P now up 22% for the year. We see funds flowing out of U.S. equity funds, probably taking gains since the U.S. market has done so well since 2009. Home builders still outperforming the S&P at 31.75%. The European ETF up 26.13%, so Europe still ahead of the United States. Germany up 28%, very strong. And, of course, we know Germany, in one survey this year, passed the U.S. as most respected nation in the world. The developed markets minus North America up 24.42%. Large caps, China is up 32.25%. Small caps up 32.66%, and emerging markets up 34.34%. So very great strength in the emerging markets in Asia this year. Commodities improving, but still down for the year, down 2.48%, but that's looking good given where we've been this year. Gold now up 9.76%. Silver back down to down 3.25% for the year. And oil finally may be flat. It's down 0.95% for the year. So can you imagine if oil ends the year even? It didn't, you know, it's been so negative this year. Anyway, the stopgap funding by Congress has been passed, so there will be no government shutdown. That's not surprising. When you think about doing tax reform and the shutdown funding before they leave tomorrow, it's a lot to get done. The reality is, if you sit back and look at the last year, it's been quite a fractious year in the District of Columbia and in the United States, and one that sort of rocked the global financial markets and geopolitics everywhere. And so I want to focus on what's been happening over the last week, because it has dramatic implications. No matter where you are in the world, it has dramatic implications to you. The faction behind Trump that engineered the Trump victory has managed to really turn the ship back to, as we discussed throughout the election, the desire to reground in North America and not put North America at risk or the United States at risk, not strip the United States further to keep the empire going, but rather, you know, strip the empire to keep making sure that we're safe and sound inside of Fortress America. In essence, reshoring and insourcing a lot of things back behind the two oceans. Let's look at what they've accomplished now that the tax reform bill is done. We have a new defense budget with an extraordinary increase in defense spending designed to really replenish and restore the military, which in many aspects has been stripped. Now, it doesn't re-engineer the military, as we discussed in the second quarter wrap-up, so you're basically keeping a very large and very expansive command structure and just pouring in new money, including new money to some of the big contractors who were so instrumental in $21 trillion going missing. Tax reform has been passed. Tax reform is essential for repatriation of foreign cash and attracting big corporations to bring that money back into the United States and invest it. Much of it easily could go to doing stock repurchases or paying down debt that were used to basically do stock repurchases while the money was offshore. So one-time repatriation is going to happen. But the other thing you're doing is by significantly lowering the tax rate, you're making it possible for corporations to stay in the United States, not do the tax inversions, and not to keep shifting out around the world. Finally, a major push was used by those factions who lost the election to basically stop Trump and the current group in their place with a Russian narrative. And thanks in a great deal part, I believe, to Bill Binney and his work, the Russian narrative has been soundly defeated. Not to say that they won't keep pushing it, but it really has gone nowhere. And if anything, Mueller's sort of twisting in the wind. They've been very successful at outwitting and outshouting the Shrieker meter on numerous occasions. They have a new Supreme Court justice in who's making a difference, and more coming. So a great deal can be done to basically put people into the Supreme Court in alignment with the thinking of the Republican group now in charge. Finally, they have essentially won on the immigration policies, although it was a very rambunctious process. But the reality is there's a real moving of the immigration policies being implemented to actually reflect the laws as they are. And finally, there appears to be a significant move to cut out the Mexican drug cartels who've been moving in. And I think we're clearly doing a major business with the Bush/Clinton group. So they've put into place a lot of the basic component parts they need to insource and rebuild what they refer to as the defense industrial base in the United States, and then build out the space effort. That's very significant. We see with the tax reform passing and the new defense budget done, we see Eric Schmidt announcing he's leaving Google. If you remember, Eric Schmidt and Google were probably Hillary Clinton's number one supporters, and it was anticipated in the Clinton administration that Eric Schmidt would have a very significant role, whether from Google or now their parent company Alphabet, or in a more formal position in government. But anyway, the fact that Eric Schmidt is leaving Google signals to me that the Trump faction has managed to consolidate their power, sort of dig in deep, and are clearly there for the, you know, the long term, or certainly through the 2018 election. And so time for Eric Schmidt to go. Google is much safer and better off with him gone and new leadership. But what that says is the new faction has consolidated their power and are now clearly in charge. U.S. tax reform. I wrote an article that I refer to consistently throughout the year after the election, because it was very clear to me that people did not understand, and we hammered this point home both in the article Productivity Backlash, but in the various conversations I had with Dr. Farrell and John Rappaport about the campaign and what was happening. What you see is a real turn, and it was Saker who described it first this way, from the people who wanted to basically drain the United States to build a global empire. You saw a turn from that group to a group that wants to rebuild the United States and is willing to sacrifice the empire to do it. And what that means, among other things, is major insourcing. There's over $2.5 trillion of cash being held by American multinationals abroad. Part of tax reform is to help bring that money back and get it investing in America. Now, some of that's great. Some of it's not so great. AT&T says they're going to invest another billion as a result of the tax reform. At the same time, I got an email from Jason Budsmith warning me that the rollout of 5G is accelerating. So, you know, who knows whether AT&T is going to help build out the most superb mind control networks ever created. So I'm not saying it's all good, but there's no doubt that there's an enormous amount of corporate investment now headed our way. The tax reform continues the process of falling corporate taxes as a percentage of both U.S. government tax revenues and a percentage of GNP. So at the same time, budgets and tax reform mean corporations are getting a steadily bigger percent of the GNP on the revenue side. So this win-lose divergence between the GNP and the general population and corporations is going to continue. And the real strength in it is in tax reform, the corporate drops are permanent, whereas the individual drops are not. So the corporate rate drops from 35 to 21%. Now, interestingly enough, it excludes worldwide income. So now instead of being taxed on worldwide income, they're taxed on only U.S. income. That's a dramatic change, arguably more dramatic than the drop in the rate from 35 to 21%. And they have a one-time repatriation rate of 8%. So if you look at the corporations who stash cash away abroad, they're getting a very different treatment, a much friendlier treatment than the individuals who tried to stash cash abroad to avoid taxes. That group has been subject to 20 years of enforcement threats and penalties and fines. Anyway, this is clearly very supportive of continued growth in the stock market. And it really reflects a desire for a dramatic change in policy. And the way to do it is to do it on a highly centralized basis through the big corporations and go really fast is the theory. The idea is, will this trickle down or not? If you look at how the tax reform went through the sausage factory, you saw the middle class constituencies and families fight back. And I suspect it's turned out much better for individuals and families than they think. Everyone I know who's pro forma their taxes so far has seen dramatic improvement in what they estimate they're going to owe next year. Again, if you're in a high state and local income tax with high property taxes or a very big mortgage, I would make sure you pay your estimated in December so you lock in those benefits which you might lose next year. Anyway, the question, of course, if you approach rebuilding America using the big corporate model, will it work? As I said, the political process really worked hard to improve the package for middle class and small business. I think the Republicans are going to have to go out and sell this to the American people who do not yet understand what it means. And it's going to take us all a long time to digest. It's called the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. And they were thinking, in fact, of changing the name before they finalized the bill, but I haven't seen if it would change. There are a lot of little nuggets in here. I've printed out the whole thing, which is over 1,000 pages long, because I want to skim through it. You never know what is hidden away quietly in these bills, so I really want to take a look. One thing that didn't make it through was a radical change in the estate tax, but they were able to double the exemption, and that's going to make a big difference to family-owned farms and businesses throughout the heartland, which are really struggling with reengineering their estates in anticipation, of an intergenerational transfer. And the reality is, at the current exemption, they were facing an enormous and very unfair inflation tax. Anyway, so more on tax reform after I have a chance to skim through the whole 1,000 pages. But what we're talking about is a very significant bill, and the Republicans are clearly feeling very proud of themselves for getting this through. The big question and the big challenge is if the growth in the economy does not work, and in fact you have to triggers serious cuts in spending as a result of the lower tax revenues, then there's going to be a piper to pay. But I think Congress thinks they're going to face that someday, hopefully after the 2018 election. The administration also came out, so we had the $700 billion defense authorization, which included a, depending on how you count it, $56 billion to $70 billion increase in defense spending. Then we had a tax reform pass, and then we also had Trump outline his national security policy, which is remarkable. Their page after page after page that read as though Dr. Farrell and I have written it. It's kind of interesting. And it's hard to kind of sort some of what it says with what's going on in these different topics like 5G and mind control. But I will say this, it's quite well done and it's worth a read. It's up on the White House website. And so it's worth a read. What it describes is a vision of a successful nation leading and competing in a multipolar world. It's almost as though the new administration is admitting we're moving to a multipolar world and we're not going to run a U.S. global empire. They seem to have given up quietly on the empire, but insisting that America is remain a leading nation. The president created a Space Corps. It's part of the $700 billion authorization, and it's also part of the national security policy. The big decision by Eisenhower after the Sputnik episode was to ensure that space was part of a civilian agency in NASA by creating a Space Corps under the Air Force. The military finally got the space program back. It looks like it's not clear to me NASA's going to go under the Space Corps. I'm not sure how that works with NASA and the Space Corps, but the Air Force is now back in control of the big money space program is what it looks like. There is heightened attention to cyberspace and cybersecurity in the national security policy. And one very interesting thing is it defines transnational crime as a primary risk. Now, transnational crime has been a primary risk all along, but the U.S. was so dependent on the profits of transnational crime, we've always described it as terrorism or other things. But frankly, it's interesting to see what that means, and I'm going to talk a little bit about what it might mean in a second. There's some other positive influences you can see on the national security policy. One is, I think, Secretary Mattis is finally having an impact. Mattis is quoted, one of my favorite Mattis quotes, he says, "History is clear. Nations with strong allies thrive, and those without them wither." And you can see from the national security policy that Trump is clearly trying to communicate that he understands that we need strong allies and we need to build strong allies. And he doesn't say that Russia and China have been out there doing a better job than we have of building strong allies, but I would say that they have. He talks a lot about cultivating values and the need to win globally based on culture. And good to see there's still some promotion of women, which means it's very clear. I showed you the chart. If you read my Promoting Women series, my chart in the last part of that series showing basically the United States. If you take the GNP of the United States plus all women globally, it beats Asia. So no matter which way we go, the consumer market means we're going to promote that we're the friend of women globally. It's very interesting, but you know, there it is. Trump can, he's done the math and he wants to promote women. Anyway, it's a very interesting document and very well done. And it represents a remarkable turn in American strategy, particularly when you combine it with the extent to which we are bringing back sort of the defense industrial base. One of the things the policy talks about is the fact that you can't build a strong military when you have supply lines that are not trustworthy because you're depending for parts on your competitors and with long supply lines. Some of this, again, remember, is automation. If you look at the shift from Global 2.0 to 3.0, Global 2.0 struggled with the unions. Now that sort of these folks think they've, or the corporations think they've dealt with unions, you can bring it back, and you don't need human labor. You can do a lot of this with robotics and automation. If you look at the latest reports, corporations are really struggling to hire. Kiplinger reported the week before last, in fact, that they've given up. Corporations in America have given up trying to get the labor they need from schools. They're just going to start training young people and do apprentices themselves. The reality is they need a very sophisticated workforce, robotics, engineers. You need far more technical expertise, and that's why the STEM programs have become so important. And that's not what the schools and the universities have been preparing. So there's a real mismatch between skills and the labor, who's now spent a fortune for college and an education and has student loans. But their skills are not appropriate to what the corporations need. And why that was allowed to happen is just astonishing. And it's one of the things you'll hear and feel in this policy. They're beating the drum about this. And be ready next year to hear a lot about workplace training, apprentice programs, and corporations training people for the higher skill jobs. The missing money, the $21 trillion missing, and Dr. Skidmore's report continues to reverberate in many different places. He did a great new interview on Michigan Public Radio, which I, if you go to missingmoney.salieri.com, you can link to the news coverage section and hear the latest interviews. We've been watching purges all year long, and Dr. Farrell and I, in News Trends and Stories in January, we'll talk a lot about the purges. One real question in my mind: we've seen sex purges and political purges of various kinds. We haven't seen the kind of shakedown purge that we saw in Saudi Arabia, where literally you roll up all the billionaires, put them over at the Ritz-Carlton. There's rumors that some torture was going on, and basically say, give us 70% of your money or you're going to stay in the Ritz-Carlton prison. And it's what I call a shakedown purge. And it wouldn't surprise me, as the $21 trillion reverberates around, if we started to go into shakedown purges. Because wherever that money went, my guess is the Bush and the Clintons ran off with way too much of it. And there are a lot of people who think the country needs that money for a variety of purposes. So don't think that there might not be purges to do some kind of shakedown of the different politicians and different factions who basically took too big a cut for themselves. Anyway, so shakedown purge in 2018, big question. But if I had to guess, I would say yes, it's coming. We have an election in Spain, the Catalan election. The separatists claimed a narrow victory today, and that is an example of exactly what's going to happen as the 2.0 legacy systems, including the national governments, struggle with the sort of emptiness of their coffers as a result of the financial coup. So the money's been moved out. It's in 3.0. And everybody, all the taxpayers sitting and being asked to fund the liabilities now that the assets have disappeared, are struggling and want to get out. So it wouldn't surprise me. We saw a lot of talk about secession in California, but it's suddenly, ever since the fires, no talk of secession. It's pretty interesting. So, but we're going to start seeing different individuals, different local governments, local state governments all around the world struggling with the liabilities in 2.0. You know, their attitude is, if the breakaways can walk with their feet, how come we? Meantime, we have a UN vote against defying Trump on the Jerusalem. We had over 120 countries voted in favor of a UN resolution calling for the United States to drop its resignation of Jerusalem as Israel's capital, despite Trump's threats to cut financial aid. And you kind of wonder, Trump has clearly been, since April, on the Make Israel Great Again plan, And you wonder why Israel is turning into the administration's huge black eye. And unfortunately, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I don't know what strings they're pulling and what threats they're making. But at this point, you almost wonder to what extent, if there's one head of the FBI in the 90s who said Israel was the number one threat to American national security. And you wonder what's up behind the scenes with that. Bitcoin the op. If you haven't listened to our Solera report on Bitcoin the op, I strongly recommend it. We also have a great discussion with Dr. Farrell in several parts of the news, trends, and stories about Bitcoin. Bitcoin peaked on December 17th at 19,200 and is now trading at 1,400. So it's as volatile as ever. There's some people who are predicting the market's about to crash and be over. I don't think so. I think if you look at the desire for the tech side of the house, the NSA side of the house, to recreate and recommand currencies globally and evolve beyond the dollar, especially get out of bank deposit insurance, I think they can take this much further, much higher. It is much cheaper to simply manipulate the price of Bitcoin up and get all the freedom fighters inventing your digital global currency train tracks. So I think this op has a lot further to go, but you know, it could crash and end tomorrow. So just make sure if you're going to participate that you listen to Bitcoin the op and make sure you understand this is a speculation and you don't want any more money in it than you're prepared to lose 100% of. Okay, our hero this week is Larry C. Wooten and Representative Matt Shea from the state of Washington, who together blew the lid off the Bundy case. Thank you both. You've done an incredible thing for the American family, for property rights, for the ranchers. And as I said, this is the year of punching back. And Larry C. Wooten and Representative Matt Shea, who did a press conference that really got the story out, because to say that the major media buried this story is the understatement of the year. Talk about the local press in Oregon and Las Vegas have really carried this. But these were two gentlemen who stood up and made a major contribution and I suspect saved the lives of a wonderful family. There was no Let's Go to the Movies this week. If you look at all the summary of all the different wrap-ups we did. Our Just a Taste video is more than an hour long. Lots to listen to. And, of course, if you dive in and take a look at all the different wonderful wrap-ups we did during 2017, that's plenty. So we said, we won't give you a movie to watch this week because there's plenty of content in the 2017 wrap-ups. As I said, the Just a Taste video at the top of the commentary this week is we took all the Just a Taste from all the wrap-ups and strung them together, and it gives you a marvelous overview of what was accomplished. In January, we had the 2016 annual wrap-up, The Glovis Harvest and What It Means to Investors, a wonderful overview of the importance and role of food. If you look at our national security plan that the new administration just rolled out, there's tremendous focus on energy and being energy self-sufficient, less focus, but it's very important behind the scenes to be food self-sufficient as well. We're a major food exporter, and we focused on the role of food to both to investors and sort of geopolitical power. And then in April, we looked at the new administration. It's called The Class of Civilization. Can a new administration preserve a prosperous economy without more debt, crime, and war? And unfortunately, if you look at where the defense budget went, it's clearly the new administration is doubling down on the war side. Second quarter, enforce the Constitution. You might as well kiss your money goodbye. Increasingly, for the last couple of years, I've been so frustrated dealing with financial issues and helping people lower their financial risk. And the reality is, if we're dealing in a lawless society, there's no financial solution. There's no financial protection. If there's no law, you know, all financial products are basically operate on a platform of law. If there's no law, you know, nothing has any value except what you can protect with a gun. And so I decided in the second quarter to fly to Bangladesh so I could spend a week with Congresswoman McKinney and really focus everyone on the importance of doing, of taking the actions now, particularly with our state and local officials, to get the Constitution in force. And of course, the first step is the appropriation clause. If I can steal $21 trillion, then I can do whatever I want because I can finance whatever I want above and beyond the law. I have complete immunity. And then in third quarter, control 101, what it is, how it's used, how you can guard against it. I said in the third quarter wrap-up that there are two kinds of people in America, people who are mind-controlled and people who are trying to get out of being mind-controlled. But we're all subject to massive amounts of control systems and mind control, and it's important to recognize that. If you do, it's amazing what you can do to break out and have a free and inspired life, but it starts by sitting down and facing sort of what we're up against. And as they roll out 5G and virtual reality hologram technology, the mind control is going to go to a whole new level. So between now and 2020, we face a new surge in mind control. And don't think the Shriekometer guys who just got control of Fox News aren't going to hit the pedal to the metal and take it to a new level. Many questions for Ask Catherine. The first one gives a fascinating background of someone who I suspect has many IQ points on me. And then they describe, I found four rules for dealing with evil. One, combine strength with cheerfulness. Fabulous. I call it staying in a state of amusement. Two, compromise with evil is impossible. I couldn't agree more. Great rule. Three, do not struggle directly with evil lest you entangle your ego. Very good advice. Four, keep making progress in the good. Great advice. I have four more, one rule and three clear indications. Always be on the offense against evil, never the defense, using always and only force choices against it, as is necessary to use the rock, scissor, paper, choice, frame language with each type situation. Evil always and only takes shortcuts. Good never does. Evil always and only seeks and causes confusion. Good never does. And evil alone and always is parasitic. Good never is. Catherine, it's always amazed me how sparse how-to instructions are in all scriptures except the occasional put on the armor of righteousness. I wish you all the best for the turning of our world and humanity to the light today, and a Merry Christmas and prosperous 2018. God bless you, and I'm eager to help you if you let me know how. By the way, per your comments on knowing family history, the McCarthy motto I've striven to live up to is, to the brave and faithful, nothing is difficult. Very, very wonderful model. Those are great ideas. Thanks. I appreciate them. One of the things you can do is do everything you can think of to spread the missing money story to state and local officials. We need to engage them in ways to create local leverage, political leverage, to start to bring that money back and to make sure that the failure of the federal government to obey the financial management laws does not cause the kind of drain and pain to state and local operations that it has for the last 20 years. Hi, Catherine. You said a while back that the debt growth model is over, echoing a certain foreign political leader. Very funny. Is the tax bill, given the delicate nature of the bond market and the other factors such as China, Russia gold hoarding, or cooking it up alchemically and cryptos, that this tax bill represents a partial move away from the debt growth model, given that corps will be buying back a lot of stock and paying off a lot of debt? Does the bill pretend to support the bank P&Ls as the bond market goes poof? I don't think the bond market's going to go poof. It's double the size of of the stock market, although the stock market's growing. I think you're going to see bonds recede in importance, and part of that is the transfer of assets and growth to corporations as opposed to governments. So sovereign governments will shrink relative to corporations, but I don't think the bond market will go poof. Corporations will finance relatively more with equity than they have, but you're going to see a lot of equity around the world securitize and a lot more entrepreneurship and activity as a result of the new technology. Now, we've seen the float in the U.S. stock market in terms of number of companies shrink, so there's been a consolidation. It's really the float globally is where you get the growth of many more companies, many more activities. But again, I think we're in a long-term bull market in equity, but I don't underestimate the risk and difficulties, particularly because of our dependency on the war model. War can be hugely destructive to equity. The You know, what you're watching is a war model that's trying to control the equity through force. Dear Catherine, thank you for your work on the $21 trillion. Unbelievable. Here's a link to a new thing in the tax bill. Key whistleblower protections cut from the tax reform law. Criminal fraudsters protected. Unbelievable. As I said, I've printed out all 1,000 pages, and I'm going to skim to see if I can find the nuggets. Sometimes it's hard to do given the legislative language, but all the law firms will be tearing through. And I'll have the benefit of their summary. So I think we're going to learn a lot about what the tax reform is completely. Let's give it another month of studying and reading. Someone sent in a link to Deborah Tavares, who had predicted the fires in Northern California back in 2015, or predicted the problems coming from Agenda 21. She and Rosa Quarez, who we had on the Salera Report, have both done a very courageous job of warning people about the different land control that's coming. For many years, I pointed out the extent to which we always have fires in areas of mortgage fraud. And one of the things that happens is in the federal mortgage funds, you can really dip and pull lots of money out on a non-transparent basis. So there's all sorts of shenanigans when you write off the mortgage fraud and pull money out of the FHA funds that I used to watch when I was at HUD. Dear Catherine, our family subscribes to your report. We very much appreciate you blowing the whistle and calling attention to some very critical issues. I found your presentation on entrainment fascinating. Your guests made some extraordinary claims, such as deep state agents planning black boxes in television studios which insert entrainment signals, and the ability to embed visual subliminals in digital content, which I know would be extremely difficult to do. It's extremely difficult to get any kind of non-voice signal to carry properly over cell phones. However, I can't find any citations in any of this material. I suggest that more citations is an opportunity to improve many of your presentations. Do you have any evidence of broadcast and entrainment by pro-government agents? Actually, I do, in the sense that I experienced it during the litigation, oddly enough. Or is this unsupported speculation? I'm not saying unsupported speculation should never happen, but please label it clearly as such. I wouldn't be terribly surprised if you were right, but I would like to have evidence before I share it with my friends. As a suggestion, I would find the Salera Report infinitely more value to me if every web page for presentations had a good bibliography that directly supported your claims. It's a great suggestion, unbelievably expensive and time-consuming to perform, which one of the reasons I and other people don't do it. In life, you know, you have to sell it for more than it costs you to make it. that's always a challenge. In 2010, when I was able to get Adam Trombley to give me the interview, which I was very surprised that he was willing to do it. At that time, it was much more dangerous than it is now. He was doing me a great big favor. Getting citations would have been essentially impossible, although it's possible if I had spent a lot of time sort of digging things out and doing the research. But I agree it would be far superior if we had them. It was one of the reasons I built the analytic capacity I had in Hamilton Securities, which unfortunately the Department of Justice destroyed. This year, I realized that I needed to provide much better and deeper coverage of the kind you're talking about mind control. And I was very conflicted because I didn't want to have our capacity go 80-90% to mind control as opposed to other topics. And that's when I discovered the extent to which TruthStream is doing a lot of that research and investigation. I don't know if you've listened to the interview with them. They are coming out with a documentary shortly, which I hope will provide some of that. And I was very glad to hear of it. And we've done a few things to really support them on that, because I think it's extremely important to have some of the scientific basis. They have one video I put up in connection with the interview where they do a deep dive on one patent. Melissa Dykes at TruthStream is doing a lot to review the patents and see what patents say about the technology. Anyway, I really appreciate your feedback, and it's something I will think about how to do. We have done a lot of book reviews following up on the entrainment interview, one on gambling, one on pornography, one on sort of how to create hook products and addiction. Jason Worth has been helping with some great book reviews. And one of the reasons we do book reviews is those books do have tremendous number of citations And that's a way for us to provide it. And you might want to check those out as well. But I think on some of these interviews, one of the reasons I like to interview people who have books. So, for example, when I interview Howard Root, he's got a great book that backs up all his claims with amazing specifics, is that we then can provide that. But I will try. We will look for opportunities and ways to do that that are economic. In Harry Blaser's recent interview of Sally Fallon Morell of the Weston Price Foundation, both of them made certain statements against the vegan diet. As a vegan and as an enthusiastic Soleria subscriber, I feel compelled to respond to this. I don't have enough time right now to do so, but it is my to-do list for early next year. For now, I just want to say that there's nothing deficient about the vegan diet. Just as Soleria subscribers prefer to put on the sunglasses and see all the spooky conspiracy stuff going on that most others don't see when it concerns Mr. Global shenanigans in banking, the economy, politics, the military, and so forth. There is tremendous misinformation about diet. I'm determined to write to you about this in more detail in the near future. Yeah, it was funny. I was expecting that. There's the Sally Fallon Morell and the Weston Price Foundation, and Harry's very much in that camp, believe that animal fat is essential for a healthy human diet. And yet I have many wonderful friends and subscribers who are absolutely convinced that they are much better off with a vegan diet. What Harry would say is a lot of the reason that that happens is because it's very hard to establish a diet, including animal fat and protein, that's really clean, that's not corrupted by GMOs and GMO feed, et cetera. And the or heavy ultra pasteurization, as Sally describes in the interview. So what he would say is a high quality, clean, Weston Price kind of diet that includes animal protein and animal fat really is better than vegan. But if you look at the people I know who are very happy, and infinitely healthier on a vegan diet, they're perfectly happy and healthy. And what I would say is everybody's different. What I find is what's important is to find the pathway for you and to hear the arguments either way, but ultimately your body will tell you what you really need. Hi, Catherine. I listened to your interview with Daniel, the dark journalist, today and want to say how much I appreciate what you both had to say. Your comment about Chuck Schumer's statement inferring that the president answered the CIA connected some dots for me. I've been wondering for some time who is really running the globalist agenda, and then they go into a long description, which you can read in the notes, about the Venetians really running things in their relationship to Skull and Bone and the Templars. Now, what I have to say is I've only met one Venetian nobleman in my life. I spent a day with one when I was in Venice a few years ago, and I found him to be one of the most enlightened and intelligent human beings I've ever met. Interestingly enough, the old families in Venice, there are only 38,000 members of those old families. And on any given day in Venice, the American tourists are approximately 150,000. One of the things he said, it was like being Mickey Mouse at Disney World. And I guess what I've found is that the only psychopaths I've ever met, you know, I've certainly hung out with a lot of people at various times in my life who run the world, and the only psychopaths I ever met were the neocons. They were manic. If you watch Charlie Ferguson's video on Iraq, which I'm always recommending, you really get a sense of how completely crazy and incoherent they are. And the Bushes and the Clintons were part of that crew. I would describe them more in the Rockefeller faction than the Ziocon faction, but they were very much on board for all of that. And the more they got away with it, the crazier they got. And they were joined by a whole world of software developers and techies whose theory was if you can get away with it, it's clever, it's good, it's fine. So I think as the financial coup proceeded and the more and more fraud that grew, you literally had a group of people who went nuts. And then you layer on the mind control. And then you get really incoherent and nuts. So I have a problem blaming, having watched thousands of Americans go nuts together and do horrible things, whether in Washington or local communities all over the country. I have a hard time blaming it on 38,000 people in Venice. And I realize you're talking about a network that now spans the globe. But I think I think your theory doesn't fit with what I've seen in this world. Now, what I will say is the Vatican is at the heart of a great deal of evil for many, many centuries. And, you know, you say the Venetians control the Vatican. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But I certainly, if I was going to pick, one organization to tag with the extraordinarily evil behavior throughout the centuries, it would be the Vatican. It was funny, when I first started to research corruption and government corruption, I got on the CIA drug listserv run by Chris Milligan, who is a wonderful publisher. He's got a great publishing company out in Oregon. And I'd get on, and there'd be these wars between people who said, one guy would say, it's all the Masons, and another guy would say, it's all the Jews, and another guy would say, no, it's the Vatican. And they didn't have an understanding of the extent to which these groups compete and cooperate. And it was funny, many years ago, I went to the wonderful Shakespeare Festival in Oregon, and I have seen most of Shakespeare's plays performed, but I hadn't seen King John, and it was playing, so I got a ticket and went. And sure enough, the whole thing was the Vatican and the aristocracy and the Masons fighting. And after the lights went on, when it was over, I thought, you know, it's 500 years later and nothing's changed. Anyway, a planet can't do this much evil without a lot of people participating and helping. So, I don't know. I think we need to disperse responsibility for the evilness. Hi, Catherine. Thank you so much for the insightful content I've come across, especially with the Missing Money and Food Series articles. I have a great amount of money involved in a gold company which finances gold mining operations. You have mentioned in previous Solaria reports with Mr. Kirby that these operations may hit hard times due to rising mining costs. You've also mentioned recently that the rise of gold-backed cryptocurrencies could be upon us. In regards to the future of the gold mining operations, since there may be more of a demand, are you able to provide feedback? Any insight is helpful. Once again, I thank you for all you do for the Solaria report. At 32 years old, you've opened my mind to so many perspectives that I've never considered before. This puts to shame the shockingly misleading primary education I've received. Welcome to the club. I feel this is a better education in true reality that most post-secondary schools could offer. Well, fantastic. I'm so glad you're with us. Mining is going to get trickier I was up at the mining conference in March in Toronto, and what you heard again and again is they have to go further. They have to take more and more political risk to continue to mine, and they have to spend more and more money to dig deeper to get the same amount of stuff. So you're talking about rising political risks and expense. At the same time, I believe gold is in a long-term primary trend, positive. So there's going to be that primary trend is going to drive the demand of gold. At the same time, because of the political and sort of risks of going deeper, you know, to get the same amount, it's the peak everything problem. I think it's imperative that you have excellent management. Investing in a company that's financing many operations diversifies and spreads the risk. I think that's a good strategy. But you really need to make sure you have high-quality governance and management. And management that can handle tremendous potential for technological disruption, because there's if you look at what robotics and technology is going to do, it could really be a game changer. So again, excellent management, but yeah, I think the long term primary trend for gold will carry you, or certainly help. Hi, Catherine. I just listened to you and Richard Dolan dismantle Corey Good. What about Philip Schneider and the subterranean battle at Dulce, New Mexico? I've never gone into that with Richard, so I don't know what Richard would say. I've certainly seen some of his presentations and really can't comment on it, but I will ask Richard next time he's on. If I applied the infinite monkey theorem, where monkeys eventually type out Shakespearean works of art, to my understanding of money management, I would be no further along in my grasp of these concepts than when I began. That being said, In your latest Money and Markets, Ask Catherine, you recommend a money manager specializing in puts. I know you don't endorse any person or institution, but I threw out a name. Would you be willing to give a Robert Redford swipe? Here's the thing. It's a big job to do diligence a company properly, so I can't comment on a company I haven't done serious due diligence on. Solari Advisors does do screens in partnership with a money partner that does a hedge portfolio. And so if you go to solariadvisors.com, we should have a link up to Parvin Asset Management. It's parvinam.com, and you can see the Solari World portfolio and as well as the Solari Space portfolio. So if you want to take a look, and that should link from our solariadvisors.com. It's parvinam for parvinassetmanagement.com. Hi, Catherine. In connection with your Control 101, I found the confessions as such with this podcast of interest on your Control 101 theme. What's interesting is not only the content, and then they sent a podcast by Jesse Felder, episode number 18, Roger McName, about Facebook. Anyway, I haven't had a chance to listen to it, but thank you for sending that. Hi, Catherine. I listened to your year in tax planning, and then they described the Roth backdoor, which we discussed last week, but we have it in here. I thought it was really worth knowing about this. Here is a crucial article, lays out the steps of the transition from Global 2.0 to 3.0, and they sent in Mike Adams' new piece on Bitcoin. It's called Evidence Points to Bitcoin Being an NSA PSYOP Rollout on One World Digital Currency. And Mike has some very interesting ideas and steps about how Bitcoin could be evolved into a controlling central currency. And because I think essentially that's part of the gist of the matter of building out the train tracks for digital currencies, I think it's worth taking a look at. So we've posted it. Good job, Mike. Okay, that's it for this week. We have coming up next week another Best of the Solari Report. This time it's the different commentaries we did throughout the year on Force the Constitution, and it's a great combination and much insight into the importance of both the Constitution and law coming into the enormous change we're going through. So I hope you enjoy it. No Money in Markets next week. So I won't talk with you before Christmas, and I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas and holidays, and I can't wait to talk to you in the new year. We're going to start off the new year with an incredible lineup of news, trends, and stories with Dr. Joseph Farrell. I've already recorded it. It's an amazing conversation. We so enjoyed our conversation last time that we decided this time we would luxuriate and really dive deep into what we thought the top stories were in all the different trends. And it does go on for a long time, so I may present it in a different way, combine it with the text so you can dive in chapters, but it's quite good. Anyway, so that will be the first 2 weeks of January, and then we'll dive into the equity overview. And then final week, our theme, which is, does your pension fund have a deep state drain? Remember, it's not just the federal budget that's getting drained. And whether you have a pension fund or not, it's important to you because in many, many countries around the world, in the developed countries, the citizens and the taxpayers directly or indirectly are on the hook. So until next week, Best of the Solari Report, Enforce the Constitution. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night, good luck, and I'll talk to you in 2018.